What's good and welcome to the Hockey Mailbag, the first sports podcast run entirely by the listeners. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, and each episode here follows a simple format. You send me whatever hockey-related questions are on your mind, and I provide the answers. If you ever want to be a part of the podcast, just send your questions to thehockeymailbag@gmail.com or to me on Twitter at Brandon_Rewicki. That's R-E-W-U-C-K-I. And to kick off the podcast ahead of the new season, we're going to start with a four-part series breaking down each of the four divisions in the NHL, making sure that we give a little love to each team along the way. And today's episode focuses on the Metro Division. Plenty of intrigue in this bad boy, with some heavy hitters up at the top, some interesting minnows down at the bottom, and the New York Islanders find themselves sandwiched in between. So we'll kick things off here, going to and talking about one of those three heavy hitters. And the first question comes from Smitty. And Smitty asks, did the New Jersey Devils have the best offseason in the NHL? Love the question there, Smitty. I mean, it certainly wasn't the busiest, thanks to Barry Trotz going loco out there in Nashville. But I think I will agree with your sentiment there. I think the Devils did have the best offseason in the NHL. Always quality over quantity is going to work when it comes to trying to rejig your team in the offseason. And I think that's the route the Devils took. And I don't think there's a team out there that was able to improve on their weaknesses more than what New Jersey did in the offseason here. Look, the big one, the mandatory move, was obviously improving in between the pipes, right? It was gross negligence that Tom Fitzgerald didn't make a move earlier last season to bring somebody in to stop any puck. The Jake Allen move obviously just happened with the Devils too far out of it at that point, but it was the move everybody expected. Maybe it happened a little bit late, but I'll tell you what, going into this season, and maybe it was a little bit of patience on Fitzgerald's part there, but to get Allen and Markstrom in at a combined $6.2 million cap hit, that is some tidy, tidy work there. So to go from, you know, the Vanacek, the Nico Daws, the Akira Schmid trio, and whoever else was thrown into the mix last year, going from that to Markstrom and Allen, a monstrous upgrade. And so I think we're going to see a little less red lights in the Devils' end of the ice this upcoming season. So that was, I mean, step number one, no doubt about it. But I really, really loved what they did on the back end there. And look, New Jersey didn't have to do anything up front because they've got one of the best collection of talent and young talent amongst forwards in the entire NHL. But I for me, Brett Pesce might have been my number one free agent target out of everybody available, because what he did in Carolina, and he was a huge part of the Hurricanes' success, I think is extremely transferable over to what he's going to bring here in New Jersey. And he's really put, and he's put in a great position, and the young defensemen on New Jersey are being put in a great position now. Because now, look, Luke Hughes, he doesn't have to feel like he has to do it all this upcoming season. Simon Nemec, right? Whichever way they rejig their pairings, right? But neither of those guys needs to feel the weight of the world on their shoulders. And they're given the ultimate security blanket in Brett Pesce and an underrated veteran as well in Brendan Dillon. But I really think, I mean, look, you get a 6'3" right shot defenseman that has been a defensive stalwart for the past 6-7 years, and you get it done for under $6 million per season. That to me was an absolute home run move by Tom Fitzgerald. Dillon maybe comes in as a little too much money, but I mean, you look at the roster he's built right now, and where's the weakness, right? Like, maybe the bottom six could use an impact piece, but if that's your biggest hole in your lineup, I mean, that's something that easily gets fixed up by the time the trade deadline comes around. So yeah, I would agree. Not the most busiest, not the biggest splashes, but I would say the most efficient offseason from the New Jersey Devils. They put themselves in a great position to battle for tops in the Metro Division. In my opinion, I think they're the front runner to do so. But thanks for the question there, Smitty. Next, oh, I wonder where this one will go. We'll go to NYR Mikey with our second question of the episode here. And it's a bit of a somber one. But NYR Mikey asks, Why do my Rangers only know pain? I wonder if this was written immediately after that Game 6 loss to the Florida Panthers. That's the only way this maybe makes sense. And in full transparency, too, I got to be a little bit careful with this one because my boss is a diehard Rangers fan. So I'm treading on dangerous water here. But I think you're being dramatically overdramatic here, NYR Mikey. I don't think the Rangers only know pain. I mean, one, you've won a Stanley Cup within the last 30 years or so. So, I mean, like, there's that. Like, Buffalo only knows pain. The Rangers could only dream of the pain that the Buffalo Sabres as a franchise have gone through. But on top of that, I can't feel a whole lot of sympathy for a franchise that announced to their fans they were going to embark on the first rebuild in franchise history. And within 2 years, they won two draft lotteries, drafted first overall twice, transitioned from one Hall of Fame goalie into another, and then had a Norris Trophy winner and a Hart Trophy finalist force their way onto the team. I cannot feel sorry. You have no sympathy for me in terms of, oh my gosh, we're going to be bad for a little bit. And then it immediately turns around because everything fell in your laps. So like there's that part of it. But I would agree. I mean, if you do look at the Rangers playoff history in the last 20 years, they might have the best collection of heartbreaking losses. Like to their credit, they do go deep a fair amount. I mean, they've lost a few conference finals. They obviously lost the Stanley Cup final to LA, gave up, I think it was 3 OT goals in that series alone, right? So like they, as far as playoff heartbreak, they've been close, but just haven't quite broken through just yet. So I wouldn't say it's only pain, my man. I think things are going to be looking up for the Rangers sooner than later. Maybe yourself too. Who knows? But I mean, look, you've got, again, in my opinion, the best goalie in the NHL, a top three defenseman in the NHL, a future stud just behind him in Keandre Miller as well. And then maybe the best collection of wingers in the entire league. So, I mean, and Lafreniere finally popped in the playoffs. I mean, him and Trocheck were their two best players. So it's not only pain. The one question I do have with New York, though, and I don't have an easy answer for this, and I don't know really how they go about potentially solving this, but it's the Mika Zibanejad dilemma. And Zibanejad's a really, really good player. No doubt about that. But when you talk about number one centerman in the NHL, he's probably in that high teens to 20 range. And you look at teams that have won the Stanley Cup, I mean, throughout time, but even in the last 20 or so years, it's littered with point-per-game players, superstars, or Selke Trophy winners. And I just wonder if, as a team, if you're ever going to be able to go through four teams, win 16 games, go head-to-head against some of the best in the NHL, if Zibanejad can match up to what some of the other teams in the East can throw out there. And I think we saw that big time with Alex Barkov going hero mode in that series against the Rangers. There was just no answer from Zibanejad there. So that to me is the number one concern. How do they fix that? I don't know. It might be an impossible move to make, to be honest, at the trade deadline or in season. It's going to be difficult to do, but the Rangers have shown, I mean, they go deep every year, and eventually you keep giving yourself chance after chance. Hey, 1 year the breaks might go your way and everything works out there. So chin up, NYR Mikey, chin up. Things are getting better, my man. But thanks for the question there. And we mentioned the trio of contenders in the Metro, and we'll cap off those three teams with a question from Jesse here. And Jesse asks, how big of a risk is Eric Tulsky getting the reins in Carolina? Pretty rare for a non-player to get a shot at the GM role. Well, thanks for the question, Jesse. And I would maybe throw a question right back at you. And that might be, why is it any bigger of a risk than a team giving a former player their first shot at being a GM in the NHL? This is no spring chicken that Carolina is giving the reins to, right? I mean, if you want to talk about an outsider, a hockey outsider getting a job, there may never be a more qualified candidate to be a GM than Eric Tulsky. If anything, I could make the argument Eric Tulsky is hilariously overqualified to be a GM. Like, the dude should be heading the team that makes the next mission to the moon at NASA. Like, that should be what Eric Tulsky is doing, not trying to figure out how to get Carolina over the hump in the Eastern Conference final. I mean, he's a legitimate genius. He's got like 20 patents out there. Carolina basically hired the modern day Thomas Edison to run their hockey department. So I think he's going to be just fine there. Not to mention, I mean, he served several years under Don Waddell, learning the ins and the outs of the business, creating contacts, things like that. I mean, look, I remember reading Eric Tulsky back in the day on Broad Street Hockey for the Philadelphia Flyers on SB Nation. And I remember learning a ton about hockey, reading him like 10, 15 years ago. So I can only imagine how the big brain on ET has evolved since that time. There's a lot of teams I worry about in the NHL. There's a lot of GMs I worry about in the NHL. I can tell you that Eric Tulsky is not going to be one of them. So I don't know if you're a Carolina fan or not, Jesse, but I would say pump the brakes on the hesitation, and that I think Eric Tulsky is going to get Carolina into a good spot, which they're already in, and not going to shock me if he can push that team to the next level. So thank you for the question on that one. Jesse, we continue on here and we shift our focus to the Northeast. I'm Canadian, so I'm kind of trying to figure this one out on the fly, but I think Carolina to Philly, that's Northeast, ish. But Riley here has a question about the Flyers, and Riley asks, is Matvei Michkov really the real deal? Well, Riley, let me say this first things first, full transparency. Unfortunately, I am a diehard lifelong Flyers fan. I know. I'm getting it checked out by my doctor. He says there's no cure. Trying to be better. I'm not a crazy Philadelphia fan, I'll say that. Like, I think as a Canadian Flyer fan, I'm able to have a little bit of, I can pull back the reins on the craziness a little bit. I only toss triple A's at Santa, not 9-volters. I'm kidding. But I feel like I'm pretty unbiased about, you know, being a Flyers fan and all the misery it's caused me. But I will say this for any Flyers fans that are downtrodden about the lack of success over the past specifically decade or so. Matvei Michkov is the real deal. I'm shocked that he is not the runaway winner for the Calder Trophy in terms of odds on DraftKings or wherever else you might find that. I believe that if Matvei Michkov, the same player, same everything, if his name was Matthew Mitchell, he would have a terrible handle. That's an awful name. But he would be getting the same hype that Connor Bedard got last year. You look at how Matvei Michkov has performed against his peers, both internationally and domestically. His only comparables are Hall of Fame players. I mean, I believe he holds the all-time record for most points at the, I think it was the U18s, and he did so as a 16-year-old through a bunch of that. In terms of the KHL, his only comparables are, I believe, Ovechkin, Malkin, and Kaprizov. This kid is going to immediately parachute into a Flyers team and become their best player. So, yes, I think he is absolutely the real deal. Does it make them a playoff team? Hell no. No, it does not do that. But I think when you talk about high-end prospects for the Philadelphia Flyers in their existence, this doesn't reach Eric Lindros level of hype. And I don't know if any, I mean, there's going to be very few players that reach what the Big E was doing back in the 90s. But I think he is rightfully the most hyped prospect since then. And he's going to be the main focus, the main centerpiece of that franchise. And I'll tell you what, he gives you a reason to watch. You know, the Flyers were a much more enjoyable team last year, no doubt about it. But I think I speak for a lot of Flyers fans here. Michkov gets you jacked to watch the team this year. So I'm putting a lot of expectations on the kid. But I mean, even as a 19, 20-year-old, however old he is, anything less than 60 points this year is going to be a big time disappointment. And bold take, I'm going to say that he he gives Connor Bedard a run for his money in terms of point totals this year. His kids, he is going to turn Philly on its head. I'm excited to watch it. So thank you for getting me all jacked up here, Riley. Appreciate that. Two questions to go here. Next up on the docket, we go to MM. And MM asks, is there a more mid team in the NHL than the New York Islanders? MM, come on. Don't do the Islanders dirty like that. Not when the mid Minnesota Wild exists. There we go. I mean, to be fair, Minnesota is the most mid team in, I would argue, maybe sports history. Like, they are just 16 out of 32 every day of the week. But I do kind of get your sentiment about the Islanders. I mean, you look at the division itself. I think they're a clear step below the Rangers, Devils, Hurricanes. I think they're a clear step, maybe a clear two or three steps above the Flyers, the Penguins, the Capitals, the Blue Jackets, which kind of leaves them again in that mushy middle, which is a lot of teams have had slow, slow deaths in the mushy middle in the NHL over the past 20 or so years. But I would say this, man, like I do think that there is a scenario where the Islanders become a bit of a surprise contender this upcoming season. I'm a big believer in, if you have elite talent at the important positions, your team's got a shot come postseason time. And you look at what the Islanders have. You've got, even though we had a rough year last year, I still think a number one netminder in Ilya Sorokin, a guy that can, who's proven that he can carry a team almost single-handedly. So you've got your number one netminder. Noah Dobson has now emerged as a legit number one defenseman. Tremendous season last year. And that allows Pellick and Pulock to be a kick-ass second pair. So you've got the goalie, the defenseman, and not traditional, but I would say like the combo of Barzal and Horvat equal a first-line center, if you kind of get what I'm saying, right? So like the spine of the Islanders, there's a lot of talent there. And I could envision a scenario where if everything breaks right this year, and Patty Waugh behind the bench is able to rejuvenate that team, kind of like what he did in his first stint with Colorado, that they become a bit of a sleeper out there in the Eastern Conference. And I mean, look, the Islanders have shown, maybe not so much last year, ran out of gas a little bit, but a couple years back, you get the Islanders into the playoffs, and that's a team that's a tough out. Like they know how to clamp it down, lock it down, and get it done when the going gets tough. So I think this is going to be a big year for the Islanders. Having said all that, I also think this might be the perfect time for them to not reload necessarily, but restock the cupboards when it comes to future assets at this upcoming trade deadline. Because you have Brock Nelson as a pending UFA who had himself another great season for the Islanders last year. You have Kyle Palmieri as well as a pending UFA. JG Pageau, only 2 years left on his deal at $5 million. There's the potential, maybe even an Alex Romanov, who's going to be an RFA after this season. I mean, if you want to keep your main core of Horvat, Barzal, Dobson, and Sorokin together, maybe you take a tiny step back this season. You move Nelson for a first-round pick. You move Pageau and Palmieri for picks. And you give yourself some ammo to restock the team going into next season. I wonder if that might not be the best route for the Islanders to avoid being stuck in the quicksand that is the mushy middle. But I think they're a better team than a lot of the teams you see in the middle of the pack in the NHL. So I'm a little more hopeful than most, I think, about the Islanders maybe surprising some people this upcoming season. But either way, thank you for the question, MM. All right, and now our final question of the episode comes from Maddie. And Maddie asks, do the Capitals or the Penguins win a single playoff game in the next 5 seasons? So not even just this season, next season, one game in the next 5 years. Well, thanks for the question there, Maddie. You know, I wonder if I should be a little bit cheeky about this one and be like, hey, you know what? They're going to make the playoffs, but it sweeps all around and they still don't win a playoff game. But I don't know. I think after what we saw this past season, how in the world could you feel confident that either of these teams are going to make the playoffs? I would say in the next couple of seasons, right? Because that really is what this window is. We all know there's not much time left. I would imagine this is maybe the last gasp, the last chance that either of these two teams have in terms of making the playoffs and then winning a game, as Maddie asked us about. I mean, look, Washington became the first team that I can remember to make the playoffs against their will last year. It took everything in their power, as well as collapses by Philly and Detroit, for them just to sneak in, only to get trounced pretty quickly by the New York Rangers there. So I guess the question is, have either of these teams made enough improvements on their roster to get back into the big dance this year? I'll start with the easy one. And it's crazy to say this, but the easy one in this equation for me is the Pittsburgh Penguins. They shouldn't be as reliant on Sidney Crosby at his age as they are right now, but they might be as reliant on him right now than at any other point since he was drafted by the Penguins. Like, it's crazy how little help he has right now. I mean, Crosby put together a season for the ages last year. He really did, right? Like, it obviously gets pushed to the wayside because of how awful Pittsburgh was by their standards. But, like, for 36 years old to put up 90-plus points and try to will them near the postseason, it was remarkable that he was able to do what he did there. Can he create an encore this upcoming season? Is it kind of tough to imagine that Crosby can repeat that? Not to say he falls off a cliff, but I mean, he could put up 85 points this year and just drop off in the slightest. And that would be a great season for a 37, 38 year old. But it's not going to be enough to push Pittsburgh up closer to the line in the Eastern Conference there. And they really haven't improved all that much since this past season, right? Like, you swap out essentially Jake Guentzel for Michael Bunting. Kevin Hayes comes over at 50% retained. Other than that, the forward group is remarkably still very similar, just a year older for Crosby and Malkin. At the back end, the big change there was Matt Grizzlick comes in. Other than that, though, you've got Carlson on the back nine. Chris Letang looked like he was on the 18th fairway last year. He just looked disinterested in playing at the level that he had been in the past there. And then you got major question marks in goal with Jari and Nedeljkovic. Not bad goaltending, but can it carry a so-so team to the postseason? I just don't see it this year. I think Pittsburgh's donezo. And if they're not going to get in this year, what are the chances they do it after that? And Crosby's, you know, at 37, maybe you give him a couple more years and it's done, but they're not going to be able to rebuild fast enough to get a win in 5 years. So I'm going to say, for sure, not Pittsburgh. Washington is a little trickier, right? Because the interesting thing with the Caps, I actually kind of like their defense. Their blue line is maybe sneaky good when you swapped Chychrun for Nick Jensen, right? But you look at their top six, and they brought in Matt Waugh as well, or Matt Roy, whatever it is. And you look at that group, that's a solid decor that they've got right there. I'm just not a huge believer in what they have up front. I mean, Ovi is what he is, which is, at this point in his career, a goal-chasing winger who will not play any defense whatsoever and do most of his damage on the power play, which is fine, but he's nowhere near the impact player that he was, obviously, a few years back. After that, a bunch of young guys that I would imagine aren't going to become major, major difference makers, probably solid, but I just that whole team and you know, Pittsburgh and Washington kind of fit the same mold for me, where they're just not quite at the level of the other wild card contending teams, let alone the teams at the top of the division there. But honestly, the thing that really seals it for me as to why the Capitals don't make the postseason is the acquisition of Pierre-Luc Dubois. I might have mentioned this in this or a different episode, but, you know, born and raised in Winnipeg, so obviously, you know, used to cover the Jets professionally. So I, you know, up front and center, have watched the franchise since they came back for the second time. And this is a team that had the enigmatic Patrick Laine at times as well, mind you. But I have never seen a more infuriating player in my life than Pierre-Luc Dubois. To me, he just encapsulates everything that is wrong in terms of what you don't want a professional athlete to be. He makes the call on when he wants to play, how hard he wants to play, how much effort he's going to give out there. And he's gotten three teams burned at this point, right? Like, I mean, LA was legitimately thinking about buying him out immediately after they signed him to an $8.5 million contract extension for 8 years. That should have been alarm bells all over the place. And I get Washington didn't give up a whole lot to get him, but I just don't see any good where this cat goes, and I don't see why it's going to change anytime soon here in D.C., and that, to me, is the biggest blow to the Washington Capitals trying to make it back to the postseason this year. And again, I think if they don't get in this year, the rest of that group gets a year older, and it's just not going to happen for them. So I would agree. I think both the Capitals and the Penguins failed to win a playoff game this season and in the four subsequent years to come after that. I just think there's up-and-coming teams that are about to overtake them, and there's nothing in the pipeline that suggests they're going to find themselves in that mix anytime soon. So tough break, but you got some hardware to enjoy, Caps and Pens fans, so literally nobody feels sorry for you. It's the way she goes sometimes. But thank you for the question there, Maddie. And that is our final question of the episode. And I will say this now as we cap things off. You may have noticed that we didn't mention the Columbus Blue Jackets in this episode. And obviously, following the tragic news of the passing of forward Johnny Gaudreau and his brother Matthew Gaudreau on Thursday, August 29th, I felt like, out of respect, just obviously doesn't feel right to talk about hockey at this time when it comes to anything involving the Blue Jackets. So we'll cap the episode off there. Do want to send out our heartfelt and most sincere condolences and thoughts and prayers to the Gaudreau family during this awful, awful time, as well as to the Columbus Blue Jackets organization and the rest of the hockey world who were affected by this senseless tragedy. Rest in peace, Johnny and Matthew Gaudreau. Like I said, that'll do it for the episode here. I'd like to thank you guys again for tuning in to another episode of the Hockey Mailbag. Don't forget to check out the other three episodes of our four-part series, kicking off the podcast, breaking down each division in hockey ahead of the NHL season. I'm your host, Brandon Rewicki, and look forward to talking puck with you guys soon.